Blog Talk Radio.
Dallas, Texas, on Friday, May the 2nd, day number 122 of 2014. Tonight we're going to be looking at some front page stories with our good friend Michael Prada. We'll be looking at Venezuela, what's going on down in Venezuela. We're going to take a look at Obamacare, some interesting enrollment numbers about Obamacare. Benghazi, all of a sudden that's back in the news, and we're also going to take a look at the jobs report that came out today. You know, when you look at the number, when you hear the headline, it sounds a heck of a lot better than when you get into the numbers. So we'll be looking at some of the inside the numbers stuff tonight. And of course, Michael is a good one to talk to about this because he's a young man who just graduated and he's in the job market right now, so he can give us a real sense of what it's like to be in the job market right now. If you're thinking about Mother's Day, and who isn't, Mother's Day is literally 9 days away, a couple of more weekends, and we'll have Mother's Day. Well, if you're thinking of a gift, how about getting your mom a copy of my book? You can go to the Amazon. If you have an account at the Amazon, you can order the book directly from there, print or Kindle, or you can go to our website, Cubanos in Wisconsin, and get yourself a copy of the book. One of the benefits of going to the website is that we will dedicate the book for you. So if you send in a request and you tell us who you would like the book dedicated to, your mom's name, your grandmother's name, whatever it may be, we'll be more than happy to get it out there, dedicated, and get it out there in time for Mother's Day. So CubanosInWisconsin.com, check it out, and let us know who you would like the book dedicated to. And we will be very happy to do so. On this day in history, a couple of interesting stories from the past. 1939, this is the day that Lou Gehrig, one of the greatest baseball players of all time, this is the day that the streak ended, 2,130 consecutive games that Lou Gehrig played over a 13-year career. I mean, just unbelievable that he would play every single game over 13 years. And, of course, the streak ended today. That was also the very last time that Lou Gehrig ever wore a uniform or played a game, because shortly after the streak ended, he was hospitalized, and we know the story. He was diagnosed with a bone disease that what we now call Lou Gehrig's disease. So the great Lou Gehrig ended the streak on this day in 1939. And here's something that we're not talking about. I'm kind of surprised. You know, I thought that more people would be talking about this, but it was 3 years ago. 3 years ago that Osama bin Laden was killed by the Navy SEALs. You know, I really thought we'd be talking a heck of a lot more about this 3 years later, but hardly anybody mentioned it. Interesting how quickly people forget, isn't it? 3 years ago, Osama bin Laden was killed by the Navy SEALs. Man, time flies, doesn't it? We're going to take a break, and Michael Prada is joining us on the other side. Let me say hello on behalf of all the young women in the world. Let me say hello to Michael Prada. Michael, they're tuning in tonight for you.
Hi, Silvio. How are you doing?
Just great. Absolutely great. Always fun to say hello to you and have you on the show. But, Michael, please tell us about yourself. I know that you're on often, but I always think that there's a new listener. So please tell us a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. My name is Michael Prada. I am an American by choice, originally from Colombia. I recently graduated from City University of New York, Baruch College. I have a degree in international relations and Western Hemisphere studies. And I'm also the founder and president of the International Center for Democracy, which is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing ties of cooperation between conservative movements around the world.
Absolutely great. And you're also in Twitter, and we have a link to your Twitter page and the show information. So if anybody wants to reach Michael, that's a good way to do it through Twitter. Well, you mentioned international, and why don't we begin with that? Let's begin with Venezuela. I know you've been following the situation quite well. Tell us, what is the latest that you're hearing from Venezuela?
Well, the protests continue, but what I find as astonishing is that the media here in the U.S. and worldwide, apparently they're suffering from fatigue from the situation in Venezuela, and they're not reporting enough what's going on in the country. Earlier this week, I actually had the honor of meeting a heavyweight of American journalism, and we were discussing the issue of Venezuela. He told me, yeah, unfortunately, I'm not interested in that. The American public is not interested in that. They're mainly focused right now in Syria and Ukraine. So it's very sad. What's going on right now in Venezuela is there are some sort of dialogues going on between some members of the opposition, self-appointed representatives of the opposition and the government. The protests continue in the streets. Venezuela is being plagued by not only the civil unrest, social unrest, but also its economic woes, basically. They have unemployment that's rising and inflation that it's 53%. Of course, in the eyes of the Maduro regime, this is all a conspiracy from the United States that has been stated, has been created in the State Department, and specifically from the exile in Miami, both Cuban exile and Venezuelan exile. In response, Mr. Maduro has announced that he is going to increase the minimum wage by 30%, which, again, it won't be enough to balance out the inflation in the country. And also something that I found really interesting and actually disturbing is that the former chief of intelligence under the presidency of Hugo Chavez and a personal confidant of Hugo Chavez, Mr. Eliezer Otaiza, was killed and shot last Saturday. So that's some news that actually came out recently. Apparently the government kept that information quiet. And I think that speaks about that all the chaos that's going on in Venezuela right now.
Right.
Something else that I found a little bit disturbing, and again, that it speaks about the insolvency of the Venezuelan regime, is that the Venezuelan regime owes more than $4 billion to the International Traveling Association, and they have refused to pay this money back to the airlines. Many airlines like Air Canada are outright canceling their flights to Caracas, because now the government, even though they have to pay back this money to these people, they're saying that because of the controls, the exchange controls that they have in place, they cannot do it right away. And now they're saying that, you know, maybe we should negotiate. Maybe we shouldn't give you all the $4 billion. Let's come into an agreement on the amount. So I find that, again, pretty disturbing, and it's going to affect Venezuela even more, because whatever few private businesses that continue doing business in Venezuela, they don't want to do that. You don't want to invest money in a country that is not going to pay you back.
Right.
Or it's going to withhold your income.
That's right.
For some silly reasons. So I believe the situation in Venezuela is growing worse and worse. And what worries me the most is, again, that the media worldwide is not reporting what's going on in the country right now.
That's right. No, you're exactly right. The coverage has been very slim. Now, I do check the Washington Post. They have a section on the internet. They have a section called the World section, and then they have a subsection called the Americas. And they do coverage. I mean, they do provide some coverage, but again, you know, it's usually in the back page or whatever. Or in the back of, not in the front page. Actually, I find that the best place to get news about Venezuela is some of the Cuban American blogs, like Babalu in particular. I mean, Babalu is daily providing very good coverage directly from Venezuela. So I would say that's a good place to get current news. They have a lot of pictures, a lot of videos, and so I would say Babalu is a good place to be for Venezuela news, Michael.
Absolutely. I mean, I always read their blog, and new media, like your radio programs, are actually the ones who are becoming the forefront of the news and news coverage. And what I call the dinosaur media, the three big broadcasters, ABC, CBS, NBC, et cetera, they're actually dying out because they're not keeping up with the world, with what's changing. But going back a little bit about Venezuela, I mean, as a country, the United States is so obsessed with the situation in the Ukraine, it's so obsessed with the situation in Syria. We're aiding parties involved in the conflict, giving them weapons, giving them money. $5 billion allegedly that we gave to the Ukrainian regime, the new Ukrainian regime, but we're not doing anything
right in
our own backyard. If we're going to talk about national security, what about Venezuela? They're right here.
Right.
They are one of our biggest supplies of oil.
That's right.
It's in America's self-interest to do something, but this administration has done nothing whatsoever.
That's right. No, you make a very good point, because I think people would be surprised to hear that Venezuela is one of our top five sources of oil. And that makes it, anytime somebody's one of your top five of anything, that obviously makes them makes their situation something of interest to you. So you'll keep us informed with what's going on in Venezuela, Michael. I love how you stay on top of that situation. But let's come to the United States and talk a little bit about what's happening here. I want to go to Benghazi for a second, because that is one of those stories that was sort of on the side, and now all of a sudden it hit the fan because a memo was released, and the memo clearly showed that this administration was very concerned about the political viability and the re-election. Now, I'm not saying they're the first ones to do that, because truly, re-elections are obviously important. But I think they may have gone a bit over the line here. And I think this is going to be a bigger story, Michael, over the next 6 months than it's been over the last six. And it's not just going to be Fox covering this. I think you'll see other sources picking up on this, because there's three questions that I have, and we talked a little bit about this, by the way, last night with Barry Jacobson, and we'll continue to talk about this with future guests like you and others. But there's three questions that I have, or three issues that I have. Number one, where was President Obama that night? Nobody seems to know where he was. We do know he took off to a fundraiser the next day, which makes you wonder what his priorities are. Number two, who came up with the story of a story that they were still peddling 3 weeks after, when they had to know? I can understand maybe the first or second day, but 3 weeks later they knew that the video had nothing to do with it. And then, of course, why so much delay, Michael, in releasing some of these documents? I understand that there are other documents that they have not released as Congress requested. Now, let me cut the administration a little slack on that last point about the documents. Other administrations have always brought up the separation of powers and, hey, we're the executive, you're the legislative, we don't have to do everything you tell us. But I would think, Michael, that it would be in the best interest of this administration politically to get all this stuff out and get it all behind them. Because at this point, they're probably, the cover-up is probably bigger than the crime, as it always is, Michael.
Well, I don't even know where to start, Sylvia, to be quite honest. I don't know if you heard of a gentleman by the name of Dan Bongino. He used to be a member of the Secret Service under President Clinton, President Bush, and President Obama until he quit. And now he's running for Congress, and I believe he's in Maryland. And he wrote a book called Life Inside the Bubble. And he has described over and over again, both in his book and his media appearances, the utter disregard for the law that this administration has. What we're witnessing right now, it's not an accident. It's not a slip. It's not administration saying, we are the executive, we don't have to pay attention to what you tell us. The president really believes that he's a messiah-like individual, and he believes that because he's surrounded by minions who are just men, tell him that everything is fine, and he's utterly disconnected from the American people. And these people who are in power right now, the president and his entourage, they're very revanches. They really want to exact revenge on the United States and its people. And by that I mean that they really believe that the United States is an agent of not good in the world, that we have intervened around the world too much and that we must cut back. And I think that they're really aware, in my opinion, and again, this is based on what I've read and, you know, different members of the intelligence community that have become whistleblowers, that the story behind Benghazi, it's bigger than the tragic and shameful death of four Americans that were left behind by this administration, that were left to die. This administration, in a deliberate manner, lied to the American people, say that it was about a YouTube video, when they knew full well that it was not about the video. The latest revelation that we're talking about is an email that was sent out, some talking points that were given to then UN Ambassador Susan Rice, who was due to appear in the Sunday shows to talk about Benghazi. And they intentionally erased and changed the language of those talking points. Instead of attack, they changed that to protest. And then they included the information about the video. And what's interesting is when the investigation came up on the first couple of months, the administration said, you know what, these talking points came from the CIA directly, not from us, so we're not making anything up. Well, it turns out that we all know today that those talking points didn't come from the CIA, because its former director, Michael Morrell.
That's right, Michael Morrell, yeah.
Yeah, he went before Congress about a month ago, and he said, you know what, when I heard Susan Rice talk about this information and saying that it came to us, I could tell you I was surprised, because that information didn't come from us. And there is another individual of the administration, Mr. Tommy Vietor. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name right or not.
You mean Dude? Are you talking about Dude?
Yeah, Mr. Dude.
Mr. Dude.
He was a former White House National Security spokesman.
Yeah.
And
he's going to go down, by the way. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but he's going to go down in history.
Because, again, he symbolizes, he represents
right.
the arrogance, the hubris of this administration.
Well, I would also add not just arrogance, Michael, but frankly immaturity. I mean, how in the world do you go on a national show with a large audience and say something like that, like, hey, dude, this happened 2 years ago. Yeah, it did happen 2 years ago, dude, but four people are dead, dude. I mean, it's really, you know, I was watching this, and I felt like this. I wish I would have just punched the guy, but then again, maybe I reacted too much. But I just thought the guy was just so crazy. Anyway.
No, that guy, it's ridiculous. I mean, he should be actually in Benghazi and go through the things that those people who died went through.
Right, but I mean, just the way that he reacted to the question, the way he was basically almost like trying to say, hey, dude, you know, come on, you know, you guys are asking too many questions. There's nothing behind the curtain, you know, that kind of attitude. Of course, I've always been very skeptical when politicians don't tell us that there's nothing behind the curtain, and they keep, you know, putting up all kinds of defenses for us to look at what's behind the curtain, because if there was nothing behind the curtain, Michael, they would have opened it up a long time ago. But obviously there's something back there they don't want us to see, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, again, and this is has yet to come to light, and it's just what I read online. I don't endorse it. But apparently some weapon running operations were going on in Benghazi.
Right.
And those operations went wrong. Those operations were aimed to arm the Syrian rebels, and obviously in Syria. So, of course, the administration is not willing to be upfront with the documents and all the information, because they wanted to cover that up. And I believe that the media, they knew that the administration was lying, and they just cover up for Obama because the re-election was going on. So, I truly believe that, again, Republicans should have pushed harder back then, because there were clear indicators that the administration was lying.
Oh, I agree. And I think if Mitt Romney had to do it all over again, I think the third debate would have been different. But in all fairness to Mitt Romney, it was very tough to get anybody interested in this because the media was not interested. You know, I think that maybe that's turning around. But one point though that I did want to make, Michael, before we move on, is that I never really understood the White House reaction. Because, you know, I would have, if I was in the White House when Benghazi had happened, this is the advice that I would have given President Obama. I would have said, look, go to the nation right now, 11 o'clock at night or 10 o'clock at night, whatever. Go to the nation right now and explain that we just got hit at Benghazi, and to our regret, we lost one ambassador and three, diplomats who were there. And say, look, we tried to rescue them. We couldn't get the resources there on time, so I regret that this happened. I am totally responsible for this, but I can assure the American people that whoever did this is going to get their justice. And as I speak to you right now, F-16s are flying and targeting certain camps and so on. In other words, I would have turned this, instead of panicking the way they did, Michael, and thinking about, wow, this is going to hurt us in the re-election, I would have turned it the other way around. I would have said, hey, let me show the country that I'm in charge, and let me show the country that we're going to kill terrorists if it's necessary. See, this is what I don't understand, their reaction, because it seems to me that there wasn't anybody in the White House who really understood what presidential leadership is all about. Anyway, that's just my reaction to it.
Well, I don't believe that actually the administration panicked. Again, I believe that the actions of the Obama White House are deliberate. And again, I'm referencing the gentleman Dan Bongino. He was a member of the Secret Service under three different presidents. And the reason why he quit his job as a member of the Secret Service was because he witnessed the utter contempt and disrespect that this administration has for the rule of law, for the Constitution, for government. All other presidents, you know, Bush Jr., Clinton, Bush Sr., etc., they didn't dare to cross certain line. But this administration is crossing that line every single day. We are actually, as conservatives and members of the Tea Party and Republicans and even independents, we are lost in the fog of the scandals of this administration. It's one scandal after the other,
right,
after the other, after the other. So we're aiming our guns to all these objectives because there are so many scandals about this administration. And I think this administration has been able to get with all of this is because of the whole race issue.
Right.
No Congress, nobody wants to touch the president because he's the first black president. Like, you know, how would it look in history if you impeach the first black president, et cetera. So that's why I think, you know, both parties and the media, of course, have given him a lot of room to do whatever he wants. And again, I stress this, that the administration and President Obama, he's so disconnected from reality that in his view, he's doing the right things. He's, you know, and as Don Bongino said it in the many interviews, when especially with the issue of Obamacare that we'll touch later, he really believed he was doing the right thing because the people around him were treating him like a messiah. So the guy might think that he was doing the right thing, and you know, and he doesn't even know what you and I or the rest of American people are rage about.
Right. No, that's a very good point. Now you brought up Obamacare, and I wanted to bring that up because there are some new enrollment figures that came out. But again, you got to look inside the numbers. And I have a post tomorrow, Saturday, at the American Thinker, you know, asking the question, what happened to Hispanics? Because Hispanics have not signed up in the numbers that they were expecting. And Hispanics were a critical group here because they're a younger group in the population. And they didn't sign up. And the other thing, too, about these enrollment figures, we don't really know how many people have paid. They keep saying that the young people have signed up, but in fact only 28% of the enrollment are people between 18 and 34. So again, that's underrepresentation of that group. But I thought it was interesting that Hispanics didn't show up, and I wonder what that says about enthusiasm in the Hispanic community for President Obama, Michael. I think that might be a sign that maybe they're not that excited about the Obama administration, Michael.
Of course, it might be that as well, but also it has to do with the harsh economic reality that the nation is going through right now. To be honest, if you are struggling to find a job, struggling to do anything, the last thing in your mind is to sign up for Obamacare, even if you're getting it for free, because you have other priorities.
Right, and because a lot of people are not getting it for free. There are subsidies that you can apply to, but you know, even the premiums and the deductibles are much higher than what you would get in the marketplace. Also, another thing, my experience has been that a lot of young people, you know, especially young men, don't usually buy insurance unless it's provided by their employer, but they usually don't buy it because they tend to, you know, they think they're Superman and they're never going to get sick or whatever. And if they do get sick, they just go to the hospital or the doctor and cut a check or, you know, pay for their pay for it out of pocket. So I think in many ways that's usually been the way young people are with respect to health care. But let's talk a little bit. You mentioned jobs, and I want to talk a little bit about the jobs report before we run out of time. The new jobs report came out today. Again, the headline, 6.3%, which is the lowest since 2008, 288,000 new jobs created. Now, that is good news, actually. If you just look at those headlines, you would say, hey, that's pretty good. But then when you look again inside the numbers, you begin to see some very troubling numbers. 806,000 people, Michael, have dropped off from the labor force. In other words, they're not looking for work anymore. That's 806,000 people. I mean, that would be a top 20 city in population, and just to think about that. I mean, that's the population of a city like Cincinnati or Pittsburgh. 92.5 million, Michael, are not working. 92.5 million Americans are not working. That's a pretty high number. But here's
that's almost one-third of the population.
Well, that's it. That's exactly right. But here's the next number, Michael, that really concerns me. And this is very troubling. The unemployment rate for blacks, double-digit, over I think it's 11%. For Hispanics, about 7.3, meaning a point over the regular rate. And then for the young people, also close to 10% or maybe a little bit higher. So, again, you know, when you look at the overall package, it doesn't look too bad. But when you get into the numbers, you see a lot of troubling numbers and a lot of potential problems with the administration. I was asking you before about enthusiasm for Obamacare among Hispanics. Look, these three groups, I don't have to tell you because you know this quite well. These three groups, you know, blacks, Hispanics, and young people were some of the strongest supporters of the Obama administration, and they have not benefited much from this economy, Michael.
Absolutely not, and they're the ones that are suffering the most right now. As you mentioned, you know, big cities, inner cities, are the ones that are going through the hardest times right now, because most of the jobs that have been created under this administration, and this is something that even the New York Times had to recognize in public. They wrote an article earlier this week about that. Most of the jobs have been created under Obama have been low-paying jobs and part-time jobs. And I think that speaks to what's going on in the country right now.
That's right. You're right. Go ahead.
In all fairness to Mr. Obama, I mean, this is a process of deindustrialization of the United States. It didn't happen overnight. It started with Bill Clinton, with NAFTA, et cetera, when all the jobs, well, good-paying jobs, started to go overseas. But the measures that Mr. Obama has implemented are not helping at all. They're even getting worse. I can speak by my own experience right here in New York City. I was telling you before we went on air, I used to have a pretty, pretty good job before I went to school, an amazing job, very well paid. Right now, it's nearly impossible to find jobs in that salary range. All I keep finding all the time are very, very low-wage, low-paying jobs, a lot of part-time jobs. And part of the reasons why people are doing that, it has to do directly with the subject we were talking about before, Obamacare. A lot of employers, they rather cut the hours because they cannot afford to, you know, insurance for their employees. And the situation is so bad and the economic uncertainty is so bad that many companies, they don't want to go ahead and assume the the investment that a new employee entails.
Right.
They are not ready because they don't know what's going to happen next. And the few companies that are hiring, they're, you know, taking longer, and then they're being more careful on the people they hire because, again, it's a huge investment. And with the certainty of our economy, things are not going well at all.
That's right. And then you have President Obama today. He was taking a victory lap on these new unemployment numbers and job creation numbers. And as I said before, 6.3 and 280,000 is a good number. You know, we want to be fair. And, you know, I am always happy when I hear that the unemployment number drops because I want people working. I mean, working people or people working is what the economy needs. But here you have President Obama today, you know, taking a victory lap about these numbers. So what did he say? He says, well, I want, you know, we're blaming Republicans for the fact that the minimum wage didn't happen. Well, the minimum wage is something that has nothing to do with creating jobs. On the contrary, it could actually hurt jobs because just because I or you, Michael, say that we would like to have a minimum wage of $10 or $20, whatever we say it is, that doesn't mean that our employer is going to pay that to us because he has to live in the reality of supply and demand and the products that he makes and his competitors. So if you say to an employer, you got to pay this guy 10 bucks an hour, well, that's not necessarily something he's going to be able to do and keep his business competitive. So that's why I've always felt that the minimum wage is really something between the employer and the employee and not something that the President of the United States should be giving speeches about. I mean, the minimum wage should really be settled at the state level, because states are a lot closer to the reality of their states than the federal government. But so, again, you know, here's President Obama talking about the minimum wage, and if he doesn't know, somebody needs to tell him that raising the minimum wage is not going to help you, Michael, find a job as a recent college grad. On the contrary, it may actually diminish some of the jobs out there, Michael.
Absolutely. And as you just mentioned, businesses, they're not going to eat up the cost of those new laws, those new regulations. They will pass it directly onto the customer.
Absolutely. That's all they can
yeah.
do. That's all they can
yeah.
do. I mean, anybody who's run a business knows that that's all you can do. I mean, you have a service or you make a product or you sell a service. Well, whatever your business is, service or manufacturing, whatever it is, you have to pay your people within the reality of your industry. Now, some industries, yeah, they can pay more than others. Some skills, you know, they get more money than others. But at the end of the day, it's all supply and demand. And if you're going to say to a fast food restaurant, hey, you got to pay $10 an hour, I think that what you're going to see is that fast food cut back employees, or they're going to move more and more into automation. I mean, that's what you're going to see. More and more of the low-skill work is going to go into automation because it's simply not affordable, Michael.
Well, that's what, for instance, is going on, and I'm a witness to that here in New York City. A lot of drugstore chains, which I won't name names, they don't have cashiers anymore. They have these computers, and you go and you check out yourself. So instead of having four or five cashiers, you just have 6-7 machines, and then you have one manager, assistant manager, that will help in case something goes wrong with the machine. But again, this administration, and it's very articulate in the sense that they keep this whole paradigm alive of, you know, Republicans for the rich and we Democrats for the poor class, and that's totally false.
Right.
All I ask people, and every time I have conversations with my fellow friends, my fellow liberal friends in New York City, which outnumber me vastly, as you can imagine, I tell them, just look at the facts. The Obama administration has been more friendly to big business than any other administration in recent history. Let's just start with Obamacare. Obamacare is supposed to help the people who cannot afford insurance, right? Yes. Well, guess what? Companies like McDonald's get a waiver from
right.
Obamacare. You have one of Obama's closest friends, which is the CEO of GE, General Electric, a huge corporation, very good friends with Obama. His company makes $14 billion of profit in 1 year, in the fiscal year of 2010, and they pay zero federal income tax. So like, when you see these kind of things, you have to wonder, are Democrats really helping the American people?
Not at all.
The answer is no. And again, this rhetoric of attacking the millionaires. You have a small business, or you had a small business in the past. When people say, well, you know, you had an income of $250,000, or let's say $1 million, an income that doesn't mean that's your profit.
Right. Exactly.
A lot of businesses barely cut even. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these individuals actually file as individuals. They don't file as companies because
right.
they're small businesses. And these account for more than one-third of our economy, small businesses. And these are the individuals that have been hurt by the current administration.
That's right.
Because
and
if we talk about the rich, trust me, $1 million is not rich anymore.
No.
Try to live with $1 million a year in New York City. You will live like middle class.
Right.
To be honest.
Yeah. No, and the reality is, see, I've never worried about the rich because the rich are going to take, the rich will be fine. For me, the important thing is the middle class, because that's how you create political stability, when you have a strong middle class. And what I see, the middle class in the United States is shrinking. You have greater disparity between the rich and the poor. That's something that is not good for the United States. And the best way to help the middle class, Michael, is to get some good paying jobs, and that means bringing more manufacturing to the United States, and frankly, getting the government out of the way. I think the government right now is the biggest reason why our job creation is kind of low. But we're going to have to wrap it up, Michael. As always, it's a great honor to chat with you. Take a minute and talk about the website and the institute that you've put together.
Absolutely. Our website is libertyprosperity.org, and the name of our organization is the International Center for Democracy, and we are a conservative organization dedicated to work with other fellow conservative organizations around the world, and you can follow me on Twitter at Mike Prada.
That's right, and we have a link to that in the show information. Michael, one quick question, and we only have about a minute, but I wanted to get your reaction to this. I mentioned at the introduction, this is the third anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden. And it's amazing to me how little we've talked about, not you and I, but I mean the country in general, has talked about this. 3 years ago, I would have thought this would have been a big story for a while, but it's almost right now like, Osama who? Oh, did we kill him? I mean, it's almost like the country has just moved on. And doesn't really, I mean, no, I don't know why that is. I'm not saying we should be talking about it 24 hours a day, but I thought there'd be a little bit more conversation about the fact that it happened 3 years ago. Anyway, that was just my reaction. What was yours?
I think that there are three main reasons that might explain why people are not talking about that. The first one is, I was just mentioned, the reality that we're facing as Americans financially. It's terrible. So people have their minds anywhere, everywhere else, but things like that. The second reason is that there is a lot of fatigue in the sense that during the past 10, 13 years or so, we pay such a heavy toll on blood and treasure that the American people, they really want to move on from everything that has to do with terrorism, war, Osama bin Laden, et cetera. And the third is that a lot of American people distrust the government for what we spoke earlier, Benghazi, or all the scandals of the administration. And there are a lot of unanswered questions regarding the raid of Osama bin Laden. Many of the individuals of the Navy SEALs team that were involved, they later died in a helicopter crash. So a lot of people, I think, they distrust the government. And unfortunately, this gives fuel to many conspiracy theories out there. Again, because this administration has lied so much that people just don't trust it.
Yeah, well, that could be. I certainly do agree with you that there's fatigue, and in fact, a new poll that just came out. I don't remember what organization it's from, but there's a new poll that just came out that basically said Americans just want to wash their hands and basically just forget about the world. Whether we can afford to do that as a superpower or not, probably not.
But Sylvia, I'm sorry to interrupt. I mean, superpower in barely militarily, and unfortunately, I don't want to be pessimistic, but it's not going to be around even for too long. Look what happened yesterday. China is set to overtake us as the greatest economy this year. It was set to happen in 2019. It's happening this year.
Right.
Many of the parts of our weapons, missiles, et cetera, are manufactured in China.
Mm.
God forbid if there is a war with, you know, between us and the Chinese, what's going to happen? I mean, we are really taking a toll and a decline as a country, and this administration, instead of making things better, they're like pressing the, you know, all the gas pedal down, taking us off the cliff.
Right. Well, that's a very good point. That's a very good point. And I think that's a very, very good point. You don't get the sense that President Obama likes the fact that the United States is a superpower. You kind of get the feeling that he thinks we're just another name in the role of nations, and that, of course, is not correct. The United States doesn't mean that we're better, but we are exceptional, and we have to think that way, and I don't think President Obama honestly thinks that way. I think that, he thinks we're just another name in the role
exactly.
of nations.
It's pretty quick. I mean, the U.S. is overwhelmingly an agent of good in the world. We
Absolutely.
Make mistakes, yes, but we are the first ones to help people when there are natural disasters, the first ones to liberate people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But as you just mentioned, in the administration, there are people who actually they want to be the underdog. They feel guilty because they of their race, because they're white. They feel guilty because they have money. They want to be like other countries. They want the U.S. to be like any other nation. There was an editorial during the election campaign of 2012 suggesting that Americans should learn from the British to go down with dignity. You know, and this is what this country is doing. I mean, many of the actions, in my opinion, many of the actions of this administration are deliberate to drive down the United States from its position as a hegemonic power to just a declining power.
Well, I cannot disagree with that. I cannot disagree with that. I think you're on to something there. I think you're on to something. And that could very well be a topic for another program, Michael. As always, thank you so much for joining me tonight. And I look forward to our next chat. And keep up the great work. And have you been to a Yankee game yet, a Yankee or a Mets game yet?
No, I have not, but
all right.
Trust me, before I leave New York, I need to do it.
That's right. You need to go out to see the Yankees because you don't want to tell people that you lived in New York and never got the Yankee Stadium.
Exactly, or see the Mets either. So.
Or see the Mets, but especially the Yankees because that is a landmark. That is like that's like going to Mexico and not seeing the pyramids. I mean, you've got to go see the Yankees. All right, my friend Michael, have a wonderful evening. We'll talk to you later. This is Silvio Cato in Dallas. Thank you so much for joining us today. Great chat with our friend Michael Prada. We talked about lots of things. Always a lot of fun to talk to Michael. Good night, everybody. This is Silvio Cato in Dallas.